Fans of Mentality Monsters around the world, we are coming at you in this penultimate week to the Super Bowl and preamble week to the Winter Olympics. If you haven't listened to our episode with Erica Lawler, who's been an Olympic medalist with the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team, please give that episode a listen in advance of the Olympic Games. Will be a blast. Can't wait to break down what happens during the Olympics here on the show with Fedja. But today's bread and butter is going to be what we saw yesterday, as we're recording this on a Monday, during the AFC and NFC championship games, the culmination of what was a fantastic postseason of football. And personally, I had some pretty powerful takeaways from the weekend. Fedja, would love to get some of your thoughts on what happened yesterday as well.
I am sad. As a Browns fan, yesterday was horrible. Division rival, who was in much the same position that the Browns were in a couple years ago, turns it around in 2 years and ends up going to the Super Bowl after drafting a quarterback and a top receiver. And then on the other side, the wide receiver that forced his way out of Cleveland to go to a better team and get an opportunity is also in the Super Bowl. Nevertheless, I joke about being sad, but I am really excited for this game because I think it's two of the most interesting teams with storylines that could not be any different, any more polar opposites than they already are.
Joe Burrow is what makes football America's favorite sport. In college, when he was at Ohio State, he was told he wasn't good enough. They gave the starting quarterback job to someone else. He had to transfer to LSU. At 6'1", his size was considered average. Small hands, first season there, 16 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, proving everyone who said that he was average right. He's from Athens, Ohio, a middle American town. Kid told over and over he wasn't good enough. Senior year at LSU, he threw 60 touchdowns and 6 interceptions, won the Heisman and the national title. He comes to the NFL to a 2-win team and undergoes a full knee construction his rookie year. And in his second year, he's headed to a world championship. Folks, none of us can relate to LeBron James. None of us can relate to Alex Rodriguez, but every one of us can relate to Joe Burrow. Told that we suck, tragedy strikes, having to make a tough move across the country, maybe to work or take a chance on ourselves. Every one of us has been down the Joe Burrow road, and that is what makes football America's favorite sport and such a great sport for us to wrap our arms around. We see ourselves in all these guys.
Couldn't have said it better myself. He is amazing. There's no other way to put it. I mean, he is like an evolved form of what Peyton Manning and Tom Brady were. And now we can say that Tom Brady was a great quarterback since he's retired. Yeah. I say that because Burrow is every bit the pocket passer that they were, with a little bit of spice added to it in that he can run and take off and make plays with his feet when he needs to. He blew my mind yesterday. And I thought that, I'll admit, I thought that there was a little bit of hype with his ability. And I was wrong. When you see how he stands poised in the pocket, how he handles the pocket crumbling around him, and how he's able to deliver these passes and make decisions that give his team a chance to continue playing. He seems to always make the smartest read and the smartest decision on any given play, simultaneously putting his team in great situations to win, whether it's like a jump ball or a risky throw, while also not risking too much to the degree that, you know, his throws or his decisions can result in turnovers or bad plays.
Yeah, I would say I regret not picking the Bengals, considering Joe Burrow passes through the lens of every single thing we've talked about on this show from a mental standpoint. I mean, how much failure could you possibly deal with? And he was conditioned to that, which is super unique for somebody who's the clear-cut number one overall pick. Like Trevor Lawrence, he hadn't even lost as many games as you have fingers on one hand.
Since high school.
Right. And maybe even JPP's hand. And, you know, how's that guy going to deal with going to Jacksonville? But Joe Burrow was clearly cut for it, from having to respond to that failure and get better for it, to work at it. And that's the thing that teams wish they could quantify when they're scouting quarterbacks. It's like how to count how many units of love you have for your wife or your dog. You can't say how many units of mental toughness does this guy have. Like, well, we know what he's been through, and we know what he can do. And it's funny to hear all the people talk about how bad their offensive line is. He doesn't care. He knows how many seconds he has in the pocket, and he knows, which makes the decision-making that you talk about that much more impressive, because he's having to do it on a compressed time frame, and he knows it. And, man, Kansas City looked disinterested in another fight this weekend. I don't know if they were emotionally drained, but when they took the lead, they were hoping that the Bengals would go away and on the road, hostile stadium, down 18 points. Cincinnati is America's team right now.
What I find so fascinating about everything you just said about Joe Burrow is that it's much the same narrative that was applied to Baker Mayfield when he came into the league and when he was selected first overall and when he was able to make plays and win games for the Browns in ways that they had never been able to win before. It's such a fine line, the perception of actually being that mentally tough guy that's able to bounce back from everything and fight through adversity and achieve the great things that mental toughness allows you to achieve, and only having the perception of that. Because when you look at Baker Mayfield, like, he had the same degrees of failure as Burrow did throughout his career. He wasn't the clear-cut number one overall pick, but he did get cut from multiple teams. He had to walk on at Oklahoma, work his way up, failed multiple times in the college playoff, won a Heisman, came to the Browns. I'm interested to see how Mayfield responds next year and if he actually does end up being that mentally tough guy that he was branded as being coming out of college, if he ends up being a lot like Burrow or if he ends up being a fake version of that, I'll say.
Burrow presents himself as someone who's very comfortable with who he is, which, considering how rare that is across the human race, much less for a 24-year-old in the NFL, is something to behold. I mean, he pulls off his own look, stylist, he's got his own style. You know, he's very comfortable with himself, the sunglasses and the chain and everything. And you're like, you know what? Good for you. Good for you. And as you said, I mean, Baker is the shadow representation of that. Like, he presents himself as someone who's trying to go through that. And this is, you know, to go a little woo, it's white magic and black magic. It's manipulation versus manifestation. Joe Burrow is manifesting that he's comfortable with himself in all these different settings, you know, with the way he dresses, going to different areas of the country. He grew up in Ohio. He'll go to LSU, no problem. You look at the connection he has with his teammates. He's very comfortable with those relationships. Mayfield didn't have that comfort. And Odell, clearly there was something going on there. Coaches this year hesitant to talk about what exactly was going on with Baker from an injury standpoint. Should we defend what he's you know, producing on the field, there's a little bit of discomfort there. You know, whereas Burrow, I think he even got injured at one point in a game late on in the season, and he was like, no, played it down. Like, yeah, I came out of the game, but I could have kept going if I wanted to. He's just very, very comfortable with who he is, and he manifests that comfort in every situation. The pocket, in the game, situation, you name it, he's very comfortable with himself.
Manifestation versus manipulation is a great way to frame it. And I think the biggest microcosm of Mayfield's need to manipulate the situation is his baker's list on social media, where he'll supposedly keep a log of all the people that have doubted him, and as a way to eventually stick it to them. If that doesn't scream manipulation, I don't know what does. It'll be interesting to see.
And if you do that at some point, you only get one life. And if you're acting to prove other people wrong and, you know, living under someone else's definition of success, it's a recipe for disaster, man, especially in a high pressure, violent, highly skilled sport. Like, you know, talk about high skill and high pressure. There was a clip late in the year, Cooper Kupp talking about, you know, talking to a reporter about what he saw on a certain play call where he found the soft spot in the zone. I mean, just the ability to have to process that much information and then eat it on the chin and get driven into the ground while someone's trying to rip the ball out from under you. You do that for a living and you've got a list of people who you want to prove wrong. It's just not going to work out for you, man.
To me, like we've been saying, I think Burrow is that white magic that, you know, of the yin and the yang, the order and the peace. And I do think that his belief in himself and his comfort with himself, it radiates out from him and it impacts the rest of the team in a way that allows them to also be comfortable with who they are and how they want to go about doing things.
Well, let's look at the evidence. On evidence, the Bengals were never able to win a postseason game with Marvin Lewis. Like, I would venture to say that Marvin Lewis is a better coach than Zach Taylor. Zach Taylor's obviously taking them further. But it's because we talked about this. One of the first things we set up this podcast really to discuss was what Jurgen Klopp did for Liverpool, right? A team that could not win a championship in 30 years, despite getting close so many times, because they would just trip themselves up. They weren't comfortable in that spot. And his presence gave them a safe space to fail and progress and develop. And Burrow has brought that to Cincinnati. He doesn't care that they're the Bengals or what happened 30 years ago or what, you know, happened during the Marvin Lewis era. He's here for now, and he's letting everybody enjoy the process as much as he is by showing, you know, people how much fun he's having. I think another major advantage that the Bengals have when you look at their roster, you know, there's a guy's Eli Apple, you know, the Giants traded him to New Orleans, and then New Orleans got rid of him, and he's on, you know, Cincinnati now, and they've got BJ Hill. There's another guy the Giants traded. They didn't want him. Right before one of the Patriots Super Bowls, I remember I was watching a sports talk show and they went down the Patriots roster. Every one of them, like Julian Edelman, college quarterback, Tom Brady, 199 overall. Just go down the whole roster. And, you know, the other team was playing the underdog card. It was like, you can't sell these guys that you're the underdog. They've been the underdog their whole life. Their whole life, whole career. I look at Cincinnati, and I think they got a lot of that. They got a lot of that going for them. They're the hunter, not the hunted right now.
That's exactly why I believe they defeated the Chiefs.
Yeah, yeah.
There were three major reasons in my mind. The first one was that what we just mentioned, their belief in themselves and their comfort with themselves. The second one was knowing that they were able to beat the Chiefs in the same exact way before. And yeah, the reason they were able to beat the Chiefs in that way in regular season was because of what you just said. They're the hunters, not the hunted. And they play with reckless abandon. That's the third thing that I believe is so important. I actually think that getting down 18 was a blessing in disguise for the Bengals in that championship game, because if you noticed in the beginning of the game, they started out very conservative. They were running a lot more with Mixon. They were effectively taking the ball out of Burrow's hands and putting the team in bad situations. Once they went down 18, they had no choice but to do the very thing that got them to the AFC Championship in the first place, which was put the ball in Burrow's hands, air it out, and run Mixon out of spread formations that thinned out the defense so that he could take advantage of his big bruising body to gain yards after contact. And those three factors, especially the fact that they had done it before in the regular season, made them capable of coming back and winning that game. Because confidence is the accumulation of past performance. And doing it over and over again throughout the regular season built up that confidence, built up that belief, and gave them something to tap into when the going got rough and they were down 18.
Yeah. Joe Mixon, that's another name. A lot of people, if you remember, he was mixed up in some controversy, did some unsavory things, and people said he shouldn't even have a career in the NFL. And he's mentally paid his dues for that. You know, so they just got a team of people that are, they're coming from that appropriate place of gratitude. Like, you're happy to be here, but you're also unsatisfied because of, you know, different things that have led to that, to where you are. Again, Eli Apple, good example, BJ Hill, Joe Mixon, and Burrow, and even the coaching staff. People said Zach Taylor should have been fired. You know, their defensive coordinator, people wanted him fired. Lou Anarumo, he was a defensive backs coach on the Giants. 2018, had a terrible pass defense. They fired him early on in the Shurmur era for the Giants. And, you know, these guys, they've really paid their dues. And they played brilliantly, with brilliant energy, brilliant confidence. I'll tell you who's subtly too one of the team's mentality monsters for Cincinnati is Evan McPherson. Like that dude guy is not miss.
He is not subtle at all.
Yeah. He is fantastic, and they gave him some nickname in preseason that he just doesn't miss. And I mean, I haven't watched every Bengals game, but man, every big moment of the year, this guy was money. Man, he is good.
He has the same mindset that Burrow has. I look at the Bengals and I see Burrow and I see guys like McPherson and Mixon and Ja'Marr Chase, and they remind me so much of a younger Patriots team. Like,
yep.
Burrow is the Brady, McPherson is the Vinatieri or Gostkowski. Chase, you could say, is your who were the early receivers that the Patriots had?
Oh, Troy Brown
and a couple of those other guys that they had that were like real showstoppers. And then they have a really strong defense with a great scheme and great discipline and ability to execute. Now, I understand it's an extremely hot take to compare the Bengals to the Patriots, who became a dynasty and all of that. But I mean, the makeup of the team it's similar, and they have a lot of talent all over the place.
Deion Branch.
Deion Branch. Yeah, that's who I was thinking of.
Deion Branch and Kevin Falk.
Yes. Yes. It'll be interesting to see them develop over the next couple of years. I think I do believe the Bengals are going to win the Super Bowl.
That would be something else, man.
Because the Rams, I think, whereas the Bengals have nothing to lose and they're comfortable in that moment, I think the Rams are very uncomfortable with where they are and that they have a lot to lose in this game.
I mean, nothing said it more than it's so interesting. Nothing said that more than McVay incessantly challenging things he would obviously lose because he was desperate. And even Troy Aikman called him that in the broadcast. He's like, yeah, McVay's a little desperate here. And it's so interesting that the one guy who on the Rams is, I would say, undoing that mentality, but he's saving them is Matthew Stafford. He's like, guys, all I did was lose. I don't care.
Yeah.
I just lost for 13 years. I'm just happy to be here. Trust me, I got this. Like, because you're right. A shred less production from the quarterback position, and the Rams were out of it yesterday because the 49ers were getting at them again. Man, they were really under their skin, and it took a really great late effort from Stafford and his receivers, and then Aaron Donald just going all six Infinity Stones in the gauntlet, Thanos level, just, I will not lose.
Well, I think the 49ers also played into that loss a
yes.
lot.
Yes.
The Niners are, they rely on perfect execution in all phases of the game to win. And it's difficult to make that happen, especially in the playoffs. And what happened with the 49ers yesterday was a lack of execution in every single phase. Shanahan didn't execute coaching-wise. He
didn't have his best game. He didn't
And I'm specifically referring to the 4th-and-2 where they didn't go for it and punted it off to the Rams. I mean, I think you have to go for it there. You have to put the ball in your players' hands and tell them to go and win it. I think Jimmy G did not execute. I think he continues to be extremely mediocre, especially in these big situations. He misses routine throws.
Kittle for a touchdown first drive.
Even when he has all the time in the world in the pocket and can settle down and really focus on mechanically delivering the ball exactly where it needs to go, it blows my mind. It's Super Bowl against Kansas City as well, like wide open receiver streaking down the field and he misses them by like 5 yards. And then I think the defense also failed to execute because they had chances, especially that dropped interception. But even at the end of the game, not being able to stop them when it counted. I mean, the Rams had to drive all the way down the field to score that game-winning field goal. And, you know, you just did every phase, just did not execute.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree in that. I think the 49ers left a lot out there yesterday. Jimmy G, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a laundry list of different injuries he has, because when he throws the ball, it looks painful. You're like, dude, what is that? Like, I know about the hand, but I think he hurt his Achilles earlier in the year. Like, is this a weird, like, lift his leg and, like, shot puts the ball? And you're like, Kittle was definitely going to beat that last safety, stiff arm his face into the turf and go for 6 in that first drive. He was wide open. It would have been 7-0 right out of the gate. And there was a couple others he missed as well. I mean, that one TD – tell you about execution. That screen pass to Deebo Samuel, that shouldn't work. Just that one man's brilliance. I mean, he shook off a D lineman, stiff-armed a linebacker, and then outran a corner. And it's like, well, I guess you don't really have to scheme that much if you can do that with one guy. I guess the execution doesn't have to be that good.
He really is incredible.
He's so consistent, too. I mean, from the first to the fourth quarter, he is delivering punishment to the defense. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. He's like a combination of Anquan Boldin and Maurice Jones-Drew.
Just like, a wrecking just, ball. Yeah. That can catch.
I'll tell you what, first play of the Cowboys game reminded me when they played them a couple weeks ago. It reminded me of, as a Giants fan, the first play of the game in the 2007 NFC Championship where Brandon Jacobs got a one-yard gain, but he chipped the paint off Charles Woodson's helmet and, like, absolutely buried him into the turf. You're like, okay, we came to play. First play of the game, it was a four-yard slant to Debo with Trayvon Diggs on him, and Diggs tackled him, but he almost lost his life in the process. Like, Debo caught it and absolutely drilled him. And when, it came down on top of him, and I was like, the Cowboys don't want any of this. Like, just, I know it. Debo was like, yeah, okay. Trayvon Diggs, who are, I don't even know who you are.
Debo is incredible, and his flexibility and versatility makes no sense. And we talked about this last week where we said his willingness to just do whatever is necessary for them to win. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing.
And I'll tell you what, he's from South Carolina. I got to watch him play in college here around where I live. He's developed so much as a player. You know, he's worked on his craft, to his credit. You know, I remember when he came out, you know, some guys like Steve Smith, former receiver for the Panthers and Ravens, he was very high on Debo, had a lot of good things to say about him. You know, so there was a lot of promise there, but he really put in tremendous amount of work to get his game to where it is. You know, he's an incredible player and an incredible story.
Talk about mindset and having the fuel to put in that effort.
Absolutely, man.
One of the things that I observed with the 49ers especially, and this is something that I relate to how we approach our day-to-day, and I talked about this last week as well, I'll mention it again, is that much like the Browns, the 49ers are not built to get down the field quickly and score, which is the situation that they found themselves in at the end of the game against the Rams. And when you, as a coach or as a team, do throughout an entire game one type of thing, when you act in a way that is aligned with one belief system or one scheme, it's very hard to flip a switch and shift to a completely different approach. And we could extrapolate this just generally to how we approach our day to day, is if you're taking actions and doing things that are aligned with one specific path that you're going down, because you become your actions. Everything you do is a vote for the person you want to be in the future, as James Clear would say. It's hard to all of a sudden just switch that and shift to something else. So you have to gradually adjust your mindset, your behavior, your environment is a big one as well, to align with whatever that different direction is. And I just don't think the Niners had the ability within their core group of players to make that change, whether it was on a dime in the fourth quarter or progressively throughout the game. Whereas you relate it back to the Bengals, I mean, they got down 18 and they were like, okay, we have to immediately change our approach and go back to a completely different style of game that we have the personnel to execute, and especially having Burrow and Chase, but they have the luxury to be able to use that flexibility. The Niners do not. The Niners are built to have the ball with the lead with 3 minutes to go and run out the clock without the other team getting it back.
We did an episode on this about how the great teams function as an amoeba almost, how they have a way they prefer to play and they also can play you in other ways where it's not so simple.
Yes.
Just to beat them in one specific way. We're talking about Bill Belichick, Pep Guardiola, Greg Popovich, how they get their all-time teams to function in this way where the standard scheme, philosophy, et cetera, which the 49ers have down to a T, as do the Bengals, as do the Chiefs, they've got that down. And if you can also be comfortable in games where that's not working and you have a plan B that you can go to comfortably. We talked about the relationship with fear in the last episode. That is knowing when to make that change, which the Chiefs, they swung and missed on that this past weekend. They never recognized the Bengals were coming back, so they kept playing the way they were playing. They should have adjusted. The strategy they came out of the gates with was good. First drive was take what's there, take what's available. And they started to get some bigger plays, and they just stuck with that. They wanted to take up the, you know, they didn't acknowledge what the Bengals were doing and that these chunk plays weren't going to serve them down the stretch. They needed to milk the clock a little more and take what was available. So I think the Chiefs had the ability to do this, much like the Bengals executed on it, but they didn't recognize that they were in that situation and they refused to make that change. To your point, I don't think the 49ers have the capability, the range to really do that and play in different ways. It's really a testament to their coaching staff that they made it as far as they did because they are such a limited team, you know, in terms of offensive production and ability. The fact that they lost a top-class defensive coordinator before the season in Saleh, D'Amico Ryans came in, did a fantastic job. You know, I'm a huge fan of Shanahan. He did a brilliant job this season. Some of his finest work, really, getting this team, you know, uncertainty about who was going to be the quarterback. And then when it was Garoppolo, he got injured. So ton of credit to the 49ers. And as a fan of the sport, I was hoping that a quarterback agnostic team could get to the Super Bowl. A team with an average quarterback could get there just as a fan of the game and of another team that might not have an extraordinary quarterback for a long time. It would give me hope to see that type of team get to a Super Bowl. Nonetheless, it was a really valiant effort on their part.
I don't think the Rams have the ability or the flexibility to change their style up either.
I think the players do, but McVay limits that. I absolutely think the Rams players can do that.
I'm not convinced. I think that what the Rams do in a nutshell is rely on their guys being better than the other team's guys. And I think this is why I believe the Bengals will win. First of all, I mentioned it before. I said the Rams have too much at stake. That they went too all in this year, getting Von Miller, getting OBJ, getting Stafford. And as I said, they have a lot to lose by losing this game because they have no future. And all of these guys that they've collected have some narrative of not getting to the game because their team held them back. And all they needed was the right environment to get back to that Super Bowl or to get to the Super Bowl, whether it's Donald or Miller getting back there or like Ramsey, Stafford, OBJ getting there for the first time. McVay wanted to prove that it was Goff that was holding the team back and not him.
Yep.
I think they're going to fall into the trap of believing that they have the personnel to be able to stop the Bengals without getting creative. They'll put Ramsey one-on-one on Chase. They'll tell Donald and Miller to just blow up Burrow because the Bengals offensive line is weak. And then they'll tell Stafford and Cooper Kupp and OBJ to just take over the game. But the thing that the Bengals have going for them is that they are aware of all of this and they can creatively plan around it. And the reason I believe that the Rams approach is going to be their Achilles heel is because when you look at the Super Bowl, this winning the Super Bowl is about winning opportunities and moments within the game. You think about like the helmet catch, you think about all these different moments in the game that could have gone either way. And when you play a style of game that is our talented guys are going to just beat your guys and we'll rely on that, you open up and create more opportunities for those moments. And I think the Bengals have the personnel, whether it's Burrow, Chase, and some of the other players, and Mixon and some of the other players that they have. I think they have the players that are capable of winning those moments. And all you need is one or two of them to turn a Super Bowl in your favor. And I think that the Bengals are going to win by 2 touchdowns. And I think that that score is not going to be indicative of the game being close. I think they'll be way ahead by the end of the game, and the Rams will probably come back with some garbage time TDs.
That's an interesting prediction. I'm done ever betting against Joey B after last week. I was a fool to do it, and I'm putting that in my rearview mirror, so I am going to roll with the Bengals as well. And I rolled with the Niners more on heart than head. I rolled with the Chiefs based on my head. This one's both. I feel good about the Bengals. I think their O-line hears all the noise as well about how, you know, how bad they are. So we can throw that whole group into the, you know, the collection of guys who were underdogs. And 49ers definitely exposed a couple things about the Rams defense to where if you had a competent quarterback, you could absolutely take the Rams to school defensively. The Rams have a very top-heavy roster. Their top 10 is as good as anybody. Their bottom 40 is not that great.
Agreed.
Yeah. So you, whereas, au contraire, I caution thee against betting against T. Higgins. We thought he was the number one last year. Tyler Boyd, he was a number one before that. You know, I don't know that the Rams had the depth to keep up with that. So you say, okay, Jalen Ramsey, go on Jamar Chase, which, by the way, I do not think that's going to work. Jamar Chase can beat him. In fact, it wouldn't shock me if on the first play of the game they went deep Chase down the field over him.
The play I keep thinking back to that tells me that tells me that the Bengals are going to have a lot of success, especially against Ramsey, is the Mike Evans touchdown against Ramsey.
Yes.
2 weeks ago. You cannot, if you are that good, give up that play. And Mike Evans is a big, fast, galloping wide receiver.
Yeah.
Well, what he doesn't have is refined route running skills. I think that Evans is really, he is a great route runner, but he's not as technical or good as Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase has the ability to embarrass you with his route running.
This is absolutely true.
And I can see it in my mind's eye now. I just put myself on my couch 2 Sundays from now, on my friend's couch, wherever I end up watching this game. I can see the Rams getting cocky, allowing Ramsey to be one-on-one against Chase, allowing their defense to shift to T. Higgins and Tyler Boyd, because you're tempted to put Ramsey one-on-one against Chase because you need to cover for the other guys as well. Absolutely. And then telling Von Miller and Aaron Donald to go get Burrow before he can do the damage. And I don't think that they're going to be able to get to him before Burrow does the damage.
Yep, he's smart enough. He's smart enough to know it too. If you look at what Brady did the second half against them, that's the formula for the Bengals. The Bucs O-line was as banged up and tired as it could be. The Rams had all their pieces firing. Second half, Burrow will see that film. It's exactly what Brady did. He took the matchups, second and third guy. They've got Mixon out of the backfield, who 51, Troy Reader on the Rams. He needs to retire because Deebo Samuel, he embarrassed him several times, like repeatedly, as did Jennings, their third receiver, not Jennings. 15, he caught a route over the middle late in the game, 4 yards short of the first down, and this dude could not tackle him. He's like, dude, what is this linebacker? What are you doing? He is terrible, and I think the Bengals will be all over him. They'll be all over the second and third corners of the Rams too. Like, as we said, these guys, I don't think they have the steam to keep up with Cincinnati, a team that is playing much looser. It's taken the Rams. The Rams have had moments of being tight in every game in the postseason so far. The Bengals haven't had one moment of tightness. They've been loose. Yeah.
Even their kicker, who's kicking a game-winning kick to take them to the AFC Championship, gets up off the bench and goes, well, I guess we're going to the AFC Championship. 50-yard kick.
And
they're the definition of loose, man.
Yeah, and meanwhile, the Rams kicker, he kicked a 46-yarder short of the goalpost. What is this, 1976? Where the kickers can't make the goalposts? Where they're, like, drinking beer on the weekends and not even working out?
Indoors.
No disrespect to that game. You know. I guess if I say, you know, no disrespect after the statement, it really is disrespectful. Whereas if I say it beforehand.
Yeah, now you're just twisting the knife.
Yeah, it means something. So if you're listening, that was a terrible kick. I still respect you.
What do you think the score is going to be? I already gave my prediction. I think the Bengals win by 2 touchdowns.
Well, 31-28 Bengals. Well, 31-28 Bengals.
Super Bowls tend to have close endings.
Yeah. That's my prediction. It's been a heck of a playoffs. It's been a heck of a postseason.
It has been a lot better than I thought it would. I mean, even down to the wild card weekend, the games were way closer than I thought they would be. The competition is – the parity in the NFL is unparalleled. And it's interesting to me that you and I can have a conversation 3-4 weeks ago about how stupid the additional team in the playoffs is and how that just creates effectively a bye week at the end of the season. And then to also be as satisfied with the playoffs as we have been.
Yeah, the NFL is trying to figure out how to create more of this. They thought that was one of the means of doing so. They were wrong, but they'll figure another one out. That's what they do.
19-week season. It's just going to keep going into the dream is that eventually the NFL just extends the season so much that it kills the dead sports gap that exists in February. If they can get us to like 1 week before March Madness, that would be ideal.
Well, I think that's the plan, and they see other sports the way they're able to monetize by having a broader calendar. You know, soccer is another sport we talk about often. I mean, a club league season goes from August to May, and if the NFL can say, okay, if we can take the playing season to March, we roll into free agency, combine, draft, which ends in May, and then we're back in training camp in August, we're good. You know, we have a playing calendar and then a non-playing calendar that really now rolls up to something much bigger and better than we've ever had in the past.
Agreed. In Goodell, we trust.
Yeah, hardly.
All right, man. I think I can't wait to watch the game. We'll be talking about it for sure.
Oh, yeah. And we'll be back on here. Previewing the game in more detail and jumping into storylines and, you know, as we learn more about the players and how they're preparing for the game, and we'll do a deep dive on that next week. Looking forward to that. In the meantime, please like and subscribe. Follow us on Spotify, iTunes. We're going to be posting our clips on YouTube as well. Follow me on social media, Real K Langan. I talk often about the content of our show. Love hearing feedback from listeners and guests. Tell a friend. And thank you so much for your support. We look forward to hearing from you next time.
Peace.